Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and we have a very special guest with us this week. Rachel Potter is with us. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Rachel is here because she has a brand new album called Stages, which is out on Joy Machine Records. It will be out this coming Friday on May 16th in all the formats, streaming, digital, and on CD, all at once on the 16th.
Yes, and vinyl record even.
Oh, really? Is vinyl coming out at the same time?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, it'll be, we're pressing it, but it'll be, you know, there's a little bit longer of a lead time for vinyl.
Yeah.
So, but yes, we are doing a special like red vinyl record. So that'll be fun.
Oh, that's cool. That's terrific. Well, the album is wonderful. It's, as the title would suggest, Stages. It's all a lot of show tunes, a lot of Broadway stuff, which we'll get into it in a moment. But I wanted to, listeners who are not familiar with Rachel Potter, let's give them a little bit of background as to who you are and about starting. I want to start with where you grew up and your upbringing and what led you into performing, because I kind of ask that about a lot of people in terms of what your family life was like. Was it a musical family? What were the influences that got you from, I know you grew up in St. Petersburg, Florida. What got you, you know, in your family unit to become a performer?
Well, I came by it pretty honestly. My mom and dad actually met in a rock and roll band in the 70s.
Ah.
My mom was a singer and my dad played guitar. And then my mom actually went into like music ministry in a church where she was a Christian singer and made albums. She's a really, really gifted vocalist. And then my dad was a really gifted guitar player. So all through my, you know, young life, I was watching my mom sing. And I think I sang my first solo on the steps of my church when I was like three. So I always sang in, you know, children's choir and all of that. I loved singing from, you know, the time that I was able to start. My mom says I started singing before I could talk. So, you know, and that's actually, funny enough, true of my own daughter, who is 1.5, and she can't really even say the words, but she's just constantly yelling. Up above the, and just like, you know, yelling the twinkle, twinkle, little star without actually knowing the words. So I think my mom says that I was just like her. And, you know, church really played a lot of roles in that, where I, you know, started singing solos when I could on Sundays or whatnot for special things. And then I got into chorus when I was in school. So in middle school, I joined the, you know, the chorus, and I would sing solos. And in high school, I was doing show choir, but musical theater was not really on my radar at all. I didn't know anything about it. And I made a Christian album. Please don't listen to it. It's terrible. But I made that when I was like 16 years old. I wrote all the songs with no help. So that's why I say, please don't listen to it. Like, no, a non-edited 15-year-old is not it. But so, you know, then I went over to Orlando, and I was working in the mall and going to college and trying hard to make ends meet. And someone said, you know, you should go and audition for Disney World. And I didn't know anything about what I was doing. I mean, you know, they say to bring a headshot and resume. Well, I brought this horrible headshot of me, like holding a microphone with big streaks in my hair, and like had no idea. And then my resume read a lot like that I worked at the Gap, and my job duties were folding clothes and working the typewriter, or the register. And I even put my typewriter speed on there just because I Googled what a resume was supposed to look like. So I had no idea. But luckily, like, the casting director saw through that, and they actually gave me a job as the Little Mermaid in the Voyage of the Little Mermaid show at Hollywood Studios.
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl who has everything? Look at this trove, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold? Looking around here, you think, sure, she's got everything. I've got gadgets and gizmos aplenty. I've got who's its and what's its galore. You You want thingamabobs? I got 20. But who cares? No big deal. I want more. I wanna be where the people are. I wanna see them dancing, walking around on those, what do you call them? Oh, feet. Flipping your fins, you don't get too far. Legs are required for jumping, dancing, strolling along down the, what's that word again? Street. Up where they walk, up where they run, up where they stay all day in the sun. Out of the sea, wish I could be part of that world. Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. Close my eyes real tight, wishing hard I might, wishing hard I might. It's done with mirrors, the magic there. Each little bird's full of springs. You press a button, it sings recorded music in the air. They've had the mountain refaced. It's only plywood and paste. Go on, say it. I'll turn around and tell you I don't care. I don't care. I will.
Is where I got my equity card, and that was my first, you know, introduction to musical right. theater and the culture of it, and I fell in love with it just fast and hard. And with my little new equity card, I started going up to New York City to audition when I could, for, you know, I'd go stand in line at the ECCs and the EPAs, and one thing led to another, and I was graduating college, and I happened to go into a Telsey office, and somebody saw me and they said, "Hey, do you want to audition for Legally Blonde, the search for Elle Woods on MTV?"
Right. I was so going to, yeah, that's I on my start. List to ask you about, because it's so interesting.
Oh, good.
Because it's, that show has, I mean, I can't remember even what year that was, but that's
2008.
That show has sort of become iconic in a way, because so many people remember that show, and it was, I guess, sort of the first time a reality competition show had been used to cast a Broadway show, because they were looking for a replacement for Laura Bell Bundy for the Broadway production of Legally Blonde, and they decided, let's do it as a reality show, and let's get all these young women and have them compete, basically. And they were all, and they were, it was sort of a mix, because I mean, I knew some of the women who were in the show. And I know that they downplayed the level of some of their credits to make them seem a little less experienced than they really were. But there were also, but there were also plenty of women in that group who really didn't have a lot of experience.
Yeah. I mean, I was one of them. At that point, the only thing I'd ever done was work at Disney World, you know, which provided a lot of experience in its own right, but not in the world of Broadway. So it was crazy because I, the day after the show aired, I was only on the, like, the first episode. But they portrayed me in like a really lovely light, and they showed a lot of me singing. I got a call from an agent the very next day, and they said, you know, do you have, I'm still with this agent to this day, funny enough. She called and said, do you have an agent? I was like, no. And she said, do you want one? Yeah, I do. Thank you. So I graduated from college that fall, and I moved to New York with an agent. And that was an incredible, you know, thing that kind of, I think, put me just a little bit of ahead of the masses. Having an agent was like, you know, amazing to be able to start my career that way. But yeah, so many of those girls, like, they got their start, like Autumn Hurlburt, you know, like, she's so beloved in the industry.
And Lena Hall.
And of course, yeah, though she was Selena Carvajal back then.
Right.
And now the incredible superstar, Lena Hall, you know, and we're all still friends to this day. And it's, Lauren Zakarin was on that show. You know, God, they're just all so incredible. And then a lot of girls moved to LA and they're still doing amazing. And a lot of them have been on television and so much talent. We actually had a reunion show in 2018 for that show that we did at 54 Below. That was super fun.
Well, I think what I remember about it is because I ended up watching it, which I was not a reality show fan, but I was fascinated by the concept of they were going to actually try and cast a Broadway show using this format. But I think what I liked about it was that, as opposed to other reality shows, they never depicted anybody as a villain or bad or mean or anything. Everybody was everybody was basically very nice and supportive, and everyone wanted people to succeed. I mean, it painted Broadway and the work, the hard work and dedication it takes to do a Broadway show in a really good light.
I agree. And you know, what's funny is that I don't think that MTV wanted it that way. But I think that the reality was that all of the girls, including myself, we all kind of just made a pact that we weren't going to talk bad about each other.
Right.
That we knew that they were going to try to get us to, and we didn't. So it was like, I remember being in interviews and them trying to be like, well, what about this? You know, trying to push me and prod me to say something bad. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. You know, just like, and that, next question.
And I think that, and I think that's why the show has had such a lasting kind of legacy, which is interesting. But
yeah, so, that's so true.
So talk about, because did that sort of ultimately lead to Wicked?
In a way. So I signed with that agent, and I said that I'm still with her, but at that time they actually, so it was like a full year I was auditioning, nothing was happening. I mean, and so then maybe I think it took about a year and a half before I ever booked anything, maybe 2 years. The agency dropped me and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was waiting tables. I was singing in wedding bands. And I actually told my mom, I was like, I think I'm going to move away. Like, I think I'm done. I had been in for Elphaba a number of times because, you know, I can hit those notes. So I think that was, and I have dark hair. So it just sort of was like, oh, yeah, you're in Elphaba. I'd been in, I mean, 7 times at least for Elphaba. Never could book it. And then Telsey saw me for something else. They saw me for Dorley, which is the Dolly Parton role in 9 to 5. And they were like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe you could play a blonde. And then the next week they had me in as the Glenda understudy. And I went for it. I mean, I wore every piece of rhinestone jewelry I could find. And I wore like a little call to the bubble dress and like these crazy sequined heels. And I just had a blast in that audition, and I couldn't believe it, but I booked it. And I think it's funny because it was like, I'll never forget, I walked out of the audition room and everyone that was there was blonde in like a very nice, like pink dress with some nice tan Leduca heels, and they all looked very professional, and I looked crazy, and they all kind of gave me a look, and you know, I guess the moral is that in a world full of tan Leduca heels, like, it's okay to be a sparkly pump once in a while.
And and it also goes to show that, you know, you don't have to be a blonde to be a Glenda.
No.
You know, and sometimes looking in the mirror, you can deceive yourself. You really can.
That's right.
In the mirror and you don't. And what you think you see is not necessarily what's really there.
Right. And you talk yourself out of it. And I'm so, you know, proud of Wicked that you don't even have to be a white girl. They had an incredible woman of color, a few different women of color that have portrayed Glenda. And I'm so glad that they are, you know, branching out in that way. It's really cool.
So how long did you do the tour?
I was not on the tour actually that long.
Oh, I thought you were doing okay.
I was on the tour for about 6 or 7 months before my agent called and said, hey, they want you to come in for Wednesday Addams and the Addams Family.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I don't think I'm right for that. You know, I'm playing Glenda. That's such a different role. Are you sure? And lo and behold, that ended up being my Broadway debut. So that pulled me off the road. I've always hoped that there'd be an opportunity for me to someday go back to Wicked, though. Wicked was such an amazing experience, and I'm so grateful that I got to be a part of that Wicked family, even though it was only for about 7 months.
The road is actually, you know, for some people, it's actually a good experience because it gives you a totally different discipline and training because you are moving, or depending on what the schedule is, you are moving around the country, you are city to city, it's hotel rooms, it can be a grueling schedule. And because of the situation of being on the road, it reinforces the whole family bonding experience of the cast and crew. That's very different than when you're like sitting in New York, you tend to have an outside circle of friends who are not necessarily in the show, and you have a social life that's outside the show. But when you're on the road, your social life is the show a lot of times, and it is the people involved with the production.
And that was so true for us as well. I'm so glad that I got to do that when I was young, when I was in my 20s and, you know, unattached, no kids. Because now, you know, I have 3 children and two dogs and a mortgage and a husband, you know. There's no world in which I can go be on tour now. And I'm so grateful for that time of my life that I was able to experience that, because it was really fun. And you're so right. It was like this family bonding experience. I am still so close to so many that I was on tour with, you know, because those are going to be friends for life because of that experience.
Right. So, and then, and in Addams Family, you're working with some of the best in the business in a sit down New York situation. Obviously noticed in your bio that you got a fun experience in the sense that you got to work with 2 different morticias, which when you do like a major cast change like that, that's also a fun experience because you got Bebe Neuwirth and then you got Brooke Shields, who replaced Bebe.
Yeah.
So, and Brooke, of course, is now president of Actors Equity, which is fun. So
I know. It's so incredible for her. Brooke is such a cool person, and I really loved getting to know her. But, you know, additionally, also some friends for life, Heidi Blickenstaff and Brad Oscar, you know, like Roger Reese, may he rest in peace, was so amazing and so much fun and such a huge mentor to me. You know, that was a really special time. And then Jackie Hoffman is iconic in every way. So, yeah, that was, Bebe Neuwirth was such an interesting person, and she was very protective of me. Like, I really appreciated my time with her very much.
I don't have a sunny disposition. I'm not known for being too amused. My demeanor's locked in one position. See my face, I'm enthused. Suddenly, however, I've been puzzled. Bunny rabbits make me want to cry. All my inhibitions have been muzzled, and I think I know why. I think I like it. I think I like it. I'm being pulled in a new direction. Through my painful pursuit, somehow birdies took root. All these things I detested, impossibly cute. God, what do I do? Mother always said be kind to strangers, but she doesn't know what they destroy. I can feel the clear and present dangers when she learns that the boy has got me pulled in a new direction. But I think I like it. I think I like it. I'm being pulled in a new direction. And this feeling I know is impossible, so I'll confide that I tried, but I can't let it go. It's disgustingly true. Pull, pull, pull. Puppy dogs with droopy faces, unicorns with dancing mice, sunrise in wide open spaces, Disney World, I'll go there twice. Butterflies and picnic lunches, bunches of chrysanthemums, lollipops and pillow fights, and Christmas Eve chocolates! Spring quartets and chia pets and afternoon banana splits, angels watching as I sleep, and Liberace's greatest hits have got me pulled in a new direction. They keep insisting I'll stop resisting. Just watch me pull in a new direction. I should stay in the dark, not obey every spark. But the boy has a bite better for than his bark. And you bet I'll fight to do what's truly taboo as I'm pulled in a new direction.
It was pretty crazy to get to experience both of them. But it was funny because, you know, Brooke is such a megastar, right? Like, she's been famous pretty much her whole life. And she had us over to her house one night for New Year's Eve. And it was just so funny to, like, just really clock how different our lives were. And she's giving us a tour. And she's like, oh, and here's this collection. And here's this art. And, oh, Michael Jackson gave me this for my 16th birthday. And over here is this. And I'm like, hold on. Michael Jackson gave you that? Like, casual, fine, no big deal, right? So it's just funny. Like, her life is so interesting, and everything she's experienced, for sure.
Right, right. And she's, and I like the fact that she's become very dedicated to the theater and very dedicated to Broadway.
In that same breath, she is so down to earth. Like, she has a painting from Michael Jackson, but she's so cool. And she took such good care of us as a cast and was so, like, she included us and she'd take us out to just, like, go get beers or whatever. You know, it was like, it was awesome to see, you know, she's so kind. And and that, you know, regardless of what her life had been like, she's just still herself. And that's really cool.
And then you've finally get to originate a role, sort of. It's a revival. It's but it's still you get to be in the originating opening night cast of Evita, with Ricky Martin, and Elena Roger and Michael Cerveris. Mm-hmm. How was that? You got. I mean, it's interesting because you got to play the mistress, so you get one. You get your own big solo number, which is one of the best songs in the show.
I also got to be a dancer in the ensemble, which was
great. I was just going to ask you that. You got to do one of the other tracks, I hope.
I did, yeah. And I was like a real Broadway dancer in that show, which was very hard for me. I've always considered myself more of a strong mover. So that really challenged me in such a good way. And I loved getting to experience that and really being such a strong part of the ensemble. But that's actually has a funny story attached to it. I had gone in for that role when they were initially seeing people. And I was in rehearsals for Adam's Family. I happened to, like, have a head cold and, like, you know, just kind of all the cards were stacked against me. I didn't really research the part. All I really knew was, like, the Madonna version of Evita. Like, I was kind of just ill-informed. I showed up in like a flamenco dress with a bunch of makeup on, my hair up and some pretty heels. I wasn't off book. I wasn't like, it didn't really sound right because I was kind of sick. Like all this to say, I didn't get a call back. I was like, oh, well, it's fine. I'm in Adam's family. I'm focused on something else. I'm not kidding. Like maybe 9 months, almost a year later, I read about it. And maybe you remember this, that they were having like a nationwide search for the mistress. Mm-hmm. They were auditioning for the mistress in cities around the country, non-equity performers, like anybody that they could find. And it was crazy. It was just like something in my spirit went, that's your job. And it just clicked in my mind, like, they haven't found her because it's you. And I was like, it was a really weird feeling. I felt like a little bit of a psychic moment. And so I wrote to the casting director personally, and I said, listen, I think I really showed poorly. And if you will let me, I'd really like to have another chance and try again. And he agreed. He said, okay. And so this time I made some really bold choices, and I got off book, of course, and I made some really bold acting and singing choices in that I decided to like sing the first stanza traditional, the second stanza mixed, and then belt the third stanza, which was like very unique for this kind of really traditional, more operatic, classically sung musical. I went in a nightgown with no shoes and no bra, no makeup, and I didn't do my hair, which was a real challenge for me because, I mean, to show up to an audition like that was like scary. But I just went for it and I booked it that day. And I was like, it was one of those real kismet, like it just felt really meant, like it was just meant to be, and it always had been. Mm-hmm. And I just botched it the first time around.
Well, so
that was cool.
So ultimately you end up moving away. What was the motivating force to get you to, because you moved to Nashville, and what drove you away? I mean, I don't want to put it that way, but what drove you to move to pursue something
to make that
different?
Change?
Yeah.
So I had been all through, while I was on tour with Wicked, we went through Nashville, and I, you know, met up with some old friends that were now songwriters here, and I just really fell in love with the town. And I had always loved country music, and I'd always been a songwriter. I started writing when I was like 12, and you know, I was like, I think I want to pursue this. So I made my first album when I was in Adam's family. I made a country album. I took a little vacation, came down here and recorded it. And then I started playing like concerts in New York, and I played Joe's Pub and like Hill Country Barbecue, and you know, anybody that would let me play country music, Rockwood Music Hall, which I think is closed now, but you know, I would just play country music. And when I would go to Nashville to meet with industry folks, they were always like, if you really are serious about this, you have to move here. Like you can't do this from New York. So it kind of felt like everything happened all at once. Evita got its closing notice. My lease was up on my apartment, and I had just gone through a breakup. So it was like I was all of a sudden very quickly unattached. Not unattached, but just not really rooted in the city in any big way anymore. And it felt like, okay, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to go give this a try. And pretty immediately after I moved to Nashville, there was an audition for X Factor. I was bartending for like only a couple of months in Nashville. And there was this audition. I happened to be in New York, and there was an audition for X Factor in Long Island. And I happened to be up there for a reading, and I was like, I'm just going to go. Why not? What do I have to lose? One of my Evita castmates had a house out in Long Island. She's like, come stay with me. I'll take you to the audition. So I went fully not expecting anything to happen. And I even showed up like hours late. You know, it was just like, oh, well, if it's meant to be, it will. And I was the last person to audition. And wouldn't you know, the producer that I auditioned for happened to love Broadway. So he's like, oh my God, you're in Wicked. Sing Defying Gravity. So he put me through. And then the next day, kind of same thing. Like I show up just kind of leisurely and like one of the last to sing and get through again. I'm like, this is crazy, because I've been through like the American Idol process a number of times, and I never got anywhere. I never got to Hollywood, nothing. And The Voice too. I'd been through that process. So I was sort of like jaded around any of these reality shows. I just figured like, it's never going to happen, but whatever, I'll try. And then I just kept getting through, kept moving on to the next round. And I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden I'm singing for Simon. And I'll never forget that audition. It still lives on YouTube, my audition of Somebody to Love. All I wanted was for him to just not be like, ew, you sound so Broadway.
Right.
Like, that's what I expected him to say, right? Uh-huh. After years of watching him say that to people on the shows. And then they liked me. And uh-huh. I got through to Hollywood. And then I got through onto, like, the top 16 and then the top 12. And I ended up getting kicked off at, like, 11th or 10th place. But, you know, it was enough that it opened a lot more doors, which was super cool. And, uh-huh. you know, really changed my life, for better or for worse. It did something.
It's you and these competition TV shows.
I know, these reality shows.
And you prove the thing that I always tell people, you know, it's the exposure. You don't have to win. You don't have to win. You really don't have to be the winner. Because sometimes it's just making the impact. It's the impact of those people being on screen and seeing you. That's what it really is about. It's getting noticed. And you obviously got noticed.
It's like a free television commercial.
Yeah. Right?
Like, imagine if you tried to purchase a television commercial at primetime TV on Fox or NBC or whatever. At those times of day, it'd be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And yet here you get to go have a little free TV commercial. So any of my friends that go on reality TV shows now, I try to tell them all these things that I wish someone had told me, which is just like, just take it for what it is. Don't expect anything from it and just use it to your advantage.
Who needs money? Not me. Who needs fortune or fame? I don't need a new career, a sympathetic ear, a name. Don't you wanna be the life of the party? Don't you wanna be the cream of the crop? Don't you wanna feel those shivering fits till someone calls it quits or someone calls a cop? Don't you wanna land the role of a lifetime? Well, you better get down on one knee. Cause you could play the life of the party if you and pray with me. Who needs lovers? Not I. Who needs heaven above? Don't have time for things unsaid, for baking bread, for love. All I need is room to fight. Don't you wanna be the life of the party? Don't you wanna be the top of the heap? This is where the jamboree never ends. Why not be counting friends instead of counting sheep? If you wanna join the heavenly choir, hurry up and get yourself in line. But don't you pass the life of the party until you pass the wine. Let the drinks pour. Let the crowds roar. Let the heavens wildly cheer. Till the sunrise brings the goodbyes, I'll be here. Never fear. Oh, who's it gonna be?
So you have been, since then, you've been singing and doing symphonies and doing focus a lot on country music and but also with big orchestras and all sorts of things. And now we're going to talk about your album because, and as also, as you mentioned before, you're also the a mom with three kids. Mm-hmm. So you've got a lot of things you're balancing, but you are also just recently connected with this new Joy Machine Records.
Yes.
They just signed you. So you have this new album called Stages, which is not country music. It is getting you back to your roots on Broadway.
Yes.
So talk about how the album came about and what did you want to accomplish with the album? Because it's different in the sense that it's big. It's very orchestrated. It's got there's multiple orchestrators on the album. So there's a lot of arrangements being done. You've got one track that is a cappella. You've got the wonderful vocal group Voctive on it. So talk about what your vision for the album was when you were getting together with Joy Machine.
Sure. So I started singing with symphonies about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I started doing pops concerts with a show called Country Legends. It was myself and a guy from Nashville, and we would do a review of country music through the decades. Mm-hmm. And that was my first experience really singing with a full orchestra. And I just fell in love with that. Every time I get to do that, it's like a pinch me moment, right? It's like so special, so classic. And that wall of sound like just gives you chills. It's so special. So I always knew I wanted to do something that was orchestra. And then when I really thought about, what was the style? Well, I've devoted my whole life to musical theater and to Broadway style music and Broadway style singing. Like that is what I've literally taken lessons for my whole life, is to be able to belt and to sing like this Broadway style. So I thought, oh, it's so silly that I don't have any work out there that represents the truth of who I really am. I think that the country music was a bit of a detour and an experiment. And like, I always felt like, it was something I could do, but it maybe wasn't who I was deep down inside, truly. Uh-huh. And that it was maybe like a mask that I was wearing. And I was always pretty good at being a chameleon and singing in different styles. So I think that country was just kind of one of those chameleon masks that I could wear. And so I knew I wanted to really have a legacy project and something that I could be proud of. I turned 40 this year, so I think it was a little bit of also like a midlife crisis project. but I just wanted something that my kids could be proud of, that I could be proud of, that, if I'm gone tomorrow, that I can feel like I truly like left it all on the stage, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so the vision for Stages was a double meaning of both all the stages that I've gotten to perform on and paying tribute to all of those, but also honoring the different stages of my life and how I've come to this point now. Mm-hmm. So there's so much that talks about, but there's so much that represents my early days starting out in New York and some of the songs that I would sing in those like open mic nights at the Duplex or the after party. Mm-hmm. And then, how I got my start at Disney World, and then my Broadway debut in the Addams Family, into, becoming a mother, and into like losing my identity, and then ultimately losing my brother in 2021. We lost him to sickness, and he, so there's a song called He Was Mine. It's dedicated to him. And then we end, and perhaps it's cheesy, but we end with For Good. And there's so much meaning for that for me, because Wicked was such a huge pivotal moment and honestly like my big first break, but at the same time, the meaning of that song, sung with my dear friend Christine Dwyer, who happened to be my very first Elphaba that I ever got to go on with, and my very last Elphaba that I ever got to go on with. So, it's everything has a meaning. And then there's Matilda with Voctive, and my son is actually singing on that one as well. And so that's really, really special. And, just about like just being rebellious and also just wanting to teach my son that, that, you know, just because something bad is happening to you doesn't mean that you can't take the reins back and write your own story. Mm-hmm. You know, you ultimately are the creator of your own destiny. And so this was just a real intentional piece to hopefully honor all of those different stages, both metaphorically and physically.
Mm-hmm. And when you are choosing songs, I mean, I know for this particular album, you were trying to choose songs that are kind of telling the story of your performing career and your life. But when you are choosing songs, what attracts you to songs? What messages attract you to songs, or what themes attract you to songs? What, I mean, that speak to you as a performer? Sure.
Yeah. You know, I think it's just each thing really spoke to me in different ways to just sort of inform, you know, where was I at this time in my life and what meant a lot to me and what do I love singing? And the why behind those can differ, of course, mm-hmm. like whether it's nostalgic or whether I feel like it, really just tells a great story for the audience. I chose My Days because that ultimately was like such a why statement for the entire album, that like I want to be proud of how I spent my days and I want to reclaim my power and my artistry after sort of feeling like I was trudging through these years of motherhood and I'd kind of lost myself and I didn't really recognize myself as an artist anymore. And I just felt like, you know, some days I just felt like I was just somebody's mom and I didn't really have my own identity anymore.
Right,
and I felt like it was important for both me and my own happiness and joy, but also for my kids to see me going after my dreams. That like, you know, just because you have kids doesn't mean that your dream life is over. Or just because you turn 40 doesn't mean you don't get to dream anymore. Like,
right.
Dreams can change and they can shift, but I intend to never stop dreaming. You know, that... Uh-huh. How boring.
Right.
There was another song that I chose, actually, that was called House of the Rising Sun. And I used to do that one with my band. And that one was really intentionally chosen because I really wanted to reclaim my power over that song because it was a real pain point for me, actually. I had performed that, funny enough, at the Legally Blonde reunion concert that we did at 54 Below. And I remember feeling like really confident at night. I felt really, you know, I had a little pink dress for, you know, it for being Legally Blonde. And I felt really good. And I did that song and the audience loved it and I felt great. Well, a couple of months later, I found the song on YouTube. And the comments were horrible about me.
Wow.
And it was after I'd had my first child, so my body had changed some.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, probably 10 pounds heavier than I was on X Factor. And you would think I was the most disgusting troll living under a bridge for what some of these people were saying. Like somebody said Rachel Porker with a pig emoji and like, oh, she's gained so much weight. Like, Rachel, what are you eating? Like, she obviously cares more about pizza, cookies, and ice cream than she does about her fans. Like, horrible stuff.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, all the stuff that as a new mom and as somebody who, number one, doesn't really recognize their own body anyway. And now these are deep insecurities that I have. For somebody to then hold a mirror up to you and tell you all the things you're worried about someone saying to you, it was really painful. And for a long time, it put me in a really dark place about putting music out because it was just like, what's even the point? Like, most of the time, it costs me money to make the music, first of all.
Right.
Like, and then I think that's one thing that people don't seem to understand is like, I actually paid to put this out, but sure. For someone to just be so mean and uncaring about, because it's not like I'm some superstar, I'm just a girl that's been on Broadway and now I live in Nashville and like sing sometimes. You know, it's like, I'm just a human. And how dare you come for me in that way? And how dare you try to shame me and my body and all of that? So all this to say, for House of the Rising Sun, it was actually one of the first ones I chose. I was like, I am going to flip the script on this song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to reclaim this song and create this powerful moment where this doesn't get to hurt me anymore. I hope that telling this story will inevitably open some eyes to, you know, to see that, like, it's really not okay to comment on women's bodies, mm-hmm. especially pregnant or postpartum bodies. Like, that is just so wrong and hurtful. Right. And, you know, women do an incredible thing when they give birth to babies. And so I think everybody just needs to shut their mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally agree. And of course, it's very easy for people to do anonymously online, you know,
yeah.
without any repercussions, and nobody knows who they really are, right. and they don't have their real names posted. So it's, you know, the joys
but
of
it doesn't make it any less hurtful.
No, it doesn't. And it's cowardly and cruel and just unnecessary. It takes all the joy right. out of being an artist. It really does.
It does.
You know, you're doing
But I decided that no one's going to be able to take my joy away in that way.
Like,
that they don't get to shame me into hiding my light and hiding what I love to do. And so anyway, House of the Rising Sun represents that for the album.
Cool. And the other thing that's really fun about your album is you have gathered a collection of a lot of your friends on this album.
Yes.
There are a lot of tracks that you are featuring many guest stars. Some of whom have actually been on this radio show, Marty Thomas and Marissa Rosen have been on the show. But talk about what that was about, because the question I have is, one, it's obviously a blast to have your friends come in and collaborate with you on some certain songs. But the question I have is, did you pick the collaborators first, or did you pick the song first? So did you pick your songs first and say, oh, who would be fun to have on this? I mean, obviously with Christine Dwyer, you knew that was obviously going to be Christine Dwyer because she was your Elphaba. But on some of the other ones, did you pick the song first and then say, oh, who would be fun to have on this song? Or did you pick the person first and say, oh, now what song would I want to do with them? Does that question make sense?
So, it absolutely does. So I think that there's, it was a little of both, but for the most part, I knew immediately, like, I have to do the Animesmic Trio with Jamie and EJ, because we did that 12 years ago, and I just wanted to reprise it because it was, you know, we just did it to a karaoke track and did, like, a really poorly shot video, and, you know, it was all shaky, and I was like, this is something that's really special to us, and we have to redo that. Ali Stroker, I immediately knew that I wanted to do Some Things Were Meant to Be and with her, and so she was actually one of the first people that I called. I had written the Les Mis medley years and years ago, probably at this point, 7 years ago, I'd written that medley. And I originally sang that by myself, where I would just flip between the two songs. And then I was like, this would be a really cool duo. So I vacillated a lot about who, and I went through a lot of options. That was probably the hardest one to pick, but Natalie Weiss has been a friend of mine for a really long time. And I kept coming back to her, and I was like, I mean, yes, this person would be great, but, like, nobody's going to sing it like Natalie. And so ultimately, that's how I decided on her, and I was so grateful she said yes. With Marty and Omar, I just knew that I wanted both of them on the record, and I kept going through, like, what song? And I came to Come What May, and I was like, this is cool, but maybe too boring. It's just, like, just kind of a sweet ballad duet. And then I came up with this really neat mashup with the I Love You song that felt so weird, and, like, I wasn't sure if it could work, but amazingly, my producer, like, figured it out, and we made that work. And we made it into a trio. And so that worked beautifully to be able to incorporate both of these crazy tenors, Omar and Marty, and have this really special moment with them. That, you know, because with both of them, I've been friends with them for, you know, each respectively about 20 years each. I really picked people that are old friends. They always say, like, you can't make old friends. And it was important to me to bring along people that have meant so much and have supported me so much through these different stages of my life. And to highlight these incredibly talented people that I know and feel so lucky to have crossed paths with, you know?
Right.
So I don't feel like there was any artistry sacrificed for using friends. Like, in fact, I think it was all the better for it.
Right. Well, and as you said, it's you're kind of putting together a legacy album, and it's not any different than putting together like a family photo album in the sense
that,
you know, if you have a photo album of your life, you don't exclude pictures of, you don't just have pictures of yourself. You have pictures of the people who are important to you. And that's what this album is. It's obviously other fellow artists who were really important to you. That's what I, because when I first started listening to it, I immediately said, oh, she must be really good friends with Marty and Marissa and, and Natalie and all these certain people. I said, that's obviously why she included them, because they obviously are very important to her life and her career and her time she spent in New York and the time she spent on the road with Wicked. And it makes sense when you do, when you hear them on the album. So what is next? I mean, the album is coming out, as I said, on this Friday, the 16th. So what's next for Rachel Potter? Other than dealing with your kids. I mean, you've obviously have a family to deal with at home.
I'll probably go do some laundry after we get off the phone here today. Seems like that's never ending with three kids. But what's next is unknown. You know, I hope that this opens some new doors that I don't even know about yet. I'll be doing some concerts this year, some album release concerts.
Okay.
I'm creating a new symphony pops show with a lot of these arrangements, and I'm hoping to bring a bunch of my friends into the fold for that and for us to start, you know, touring a pop symphony concert series that's Broadway. And, you know, we'll just go from there. I think the journey is not over. It's just begun, really, here in this second half of life. And I hope Broadway calls me again someday, but...
I was going to ask, any urge to get back on the Broadway stage?
Oh, for sure. I've never stopped wanting to go back to Broadway. But, you know, life is different now. I've got all these kids and dogs and a mortgage and all this, you know, responsibility. So the timing has to be right. I don't get to go couch surf anymore and just, you know, audition and see what happens, you know. I've got a lot of people depending on me now, and so that's not quite as easy. But I really hope that it can come around for me again one day.
Are you still writing?
Yeah. Not as much anymore, just because, you know, it takes time. And but I think this has been a really good relaunch into this world for me. I mean, honestly, when COVID happened, and funny enough, I actually, now that you mentioned Broadway, my husband and I, we tried to move back to New York to go back after Broadway. And I was, you know, going to go audition again. And we sold all our stuff. We quit our jobs. We moved to New York City on February 1st of 2020.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yes. So we were there about 40 days before the world shut down. For COVID. So, you know, that just wasn't the right time. And so we came back to Nashville, had two more kids. And, you know, I really just put my head down. I got a different job. I've been working in corporate real estate for 5 years now. And, you know, just reshifted priorities and focus, because for so long, like, our industry has really been suffering, and it wasn't something that I could count on anymore.
Right.
So, you know, things have obviously changed back, and we're heading in a great direction with the industry, and things are really recovering. And, you know, who knows? But I'll never count out Broadway. It's my home and I love it so much. And I know that I'll be back there someday. I just don't know when.
You have a dream role that you've always wanted to play?
I really want to play Sally Bowles. I wish I could go play Sally Bowles in the current rendition of Cabaret. It's so cool. So maybe this time was on there because it is.
Oh, it's an audition
for me.
It's an audition.
Yeah, that's right. It's an audition. Are you listening?
I think it says Sonia Friedman. Maybe we'll have to get that track.
That's right. Hello.
Okay.
I know.
We'll get a copy of the album over, the CD over to her.
Honestly, I would love to play Elphaba. I still covet that role. I might be too old now.
Oh, you never know. One of the rare actresses who's done both.
Yes, that would be so cool to get to play both. But I think that maybe there's a role someday that I'll get to play that hasn't been written yet. But I still want to play Jenna in Waitress somewhere. I know that it's, well, who knows? I guess anything's possible and it could come back to Broadway. But, and you know, this is silly, but I want to play Celine Dion in Titanic. So good. Oh my God. It's truly one of the funniest things I've seen in a very long time. And while we're on the subject of funny, I would love to be either of the women in Death Becomes Her. Holy moly. So funny.
Oh, you would be fantastic as a replacement or even just as an understudy or standby for them.
Thank you. Megan Hilty is a friend, and then Torian Everett, who's starring in that, is actually, funny enough, he helped me the morning of my audition for Wednesday Addams. He like went through my sides with me that morning before I went in. And so then I went and starred in The Lump Fontaine, and now he's starring in The Lump Fontaine. Mm. So that's a cool full circle moment. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, him being in one of my music videos or something to kind of pay tribute to that. But, you know, we're all so connected and everybody knows each other, and it's such a family.
If you're ever willing to get back on the road, you know, they just announced the national tour.
I know. Well, I mean, I guess I could say
it's not going out till 2026.
All right. Well,
fall of 2026.
I guess I could buy an RV and take
There you go.
We like the Partridge family.
Like a little, you know, get them to, you know, help subsidize a Winnebago. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And get the family out on the
road. Who needs school, really? I guess I could homeschool too.
Homeschool.
Just add that to my list.
There you go. You're a very multifaceted talent.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about homeschooling. I'm not sure if I'm talented that way.
Well, you could just hire a nanny, a tutor.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. Well, Rachel,
we're wishing it into existence.
There you go. I am going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining me to talk about your life, your career, and your wonderful new album called Stages, which is coming out, as we said, digital streaming and CD and a red vinyl pressing coming soon on Joy Machine Records. It's fantastic, and it features Rachel with a lot of her wonderful friends and her son on one track. So you'll have to listen to it. It's a lot of wonderful contemporary, one of the things I also wanted to note is there's a lot of the show tunes are from more recent Broadway shows,
yes,
which is very nice.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of contemporary Broadway stuff, fully orchestrated. So it's beautiful to listen to. So congratulations on the album.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me. And thanks everybody for listening.
Said the people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn, and we are led to those who help us most to grow if we let them, and we help them in return. Well, I don't know. I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes a sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood. Who can say I've been changed for the better, but because I knew you, I have been changed for good. let me say before we part, so much of me is made of what I learned from you. You'll be with me like a handprint on my heart. And now, whatever way our stories end, I know you have rewritten mine by being my friend. Like a ship blown from its mooring by a wind off the sea, like a sea dropped by a skybird in a distant wood. Who can say if I've been changed for the better? But because I knew you, because I knew you, I have been changed for good. And just to clear the air, I ask forgiveness for the things I've done you blame me for. But then I guess we know there's blame to share, and none of it seems to matter anymore. Like the comet pulled the shore as it passes us by a wind off the sea. Like a stream that meets a boulder halfway. I do believe I have been changed for the better. And because I knew you, because I knew you, because I knew you, I have been changed.